This is Bird Note. It's spring, and for many birds, a time to look their best to attract a new mate. This American goldfinch has recently molted. Its old worn-down feathers have fallen out, and new ones have grown in. The male is now a vivid yellow with a striking black back and wings. When goldfinches molt in the fall, they lose these brightly colored feathers. That way, they may hang around all winter unnoticed. Their winter camouflage helps them blend in with the drab background of the season. In spring, they molt again, making a dramatic change into their stunning breeding plumage. And the goldfinch isn't the only bird to make this surprising transition. The willow ptarmigan, a bird of the northern latitudes, is rusty brown in summer, blending in with the tundra where it nests. In the fall, its plumage changes to winter white, matching the landscape. Some gulls, like these laughing gulls, and also the Bonaparte's gull, add dapper black or brown hoods for the breeding season. Summer, fall, winter, or spring, we're glad you listened to Bird Note. I'm Mary McCann.
In the big, big crowd, you and me at a festival, feeling every bit inside, and I'm weak in the knees from standing too long. And in the hot, hot summer, there's a fire on stage. These wandering eyes catch you smiling so big, just can't believe it. With their backs against vibrant sky, you will see me in a new in the city. Let's go chat up an old friend. Everything's different about it for reasons unknown to man. Moon tosses from the ridge line, scary lucky 24. You could never make them disappear. Those parts of me you couldn't bring to heal. With their backs against a vibrant sky, backs against a vibrant sky. Only then you will see me in a new light.
latest from Wyatt C. Lewis featuring Wild Pink.
In the hot, hot summer.
That was Oh Vibrant Sky. Very much anticipating his debut album, which is slated to be released next month. Before that, you heard Pool Blood, newest by her, with Resin. My name is Leslie. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Do you know that meme of that guy from, I think the show is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and like he's got like a bunch of like papers and like tacked onto like a corkboard wall, and he's got like strings like connecting things and stuff. Okay, imagine that is me right now. Here are all of the reasons why that MIAI, which is technically a Japanese girl idol group, is not a J-pop group. They are a K-pop group. Get into it, okay? Number one, I'm gonna lay down like the basic things and then get conceptual, because number one, like, they are produced by a Korean company, I believe, like Lap One, which is the Japanese company that produces them. I know I just said it's Korean. It is technically Korean because I believe it's a subsidiary of CJEM, which is a big Korean media company. I believe that's what's happening there. Number two, they came out of a Korean format television show. Three, they are learning Korean. Four, they've released a Korean version of their debut single, Click. Five, constantly traveling in Korea back and forth from Japan to Korea. And here is where I get conceptual. What even is K-pop in that sense then? Because basically, it might seem like what I'm saying is like anything that's like popular music that's like kind of like heavily Korean influenced is K-pop. Well, theoretically speaking, K-pop is a type of like hybrid culture product. Back in the day, like at least 5 years ago when I was studying communications, the theory was that K-pop, what we call Korean popular culture, and particularly its music, is called K-pop not necessarily because it's sung in Korean, but because it is made up of multiple components of many different cultures, entertainment products and systems, and then heavily produced in Korea for a Korean audience. So there's a lot of scholarship on this, but you can start, for example, with the work of Dal Young-jin, whose research is mostly these days about the shifts in Korean culture and soft power. K-pop, as defined, like, at least 5 years ago, is made up of a few components. Number one, influences of American and European music, particularly popular music. So we see a lot of that with like 90s American girl group R&B and hip hop. That's why, you know, plenty of people have made the argument that K-pop music is questionably appropriating Black American culture, because it is so heavily influenced by hip-hop and R&B of the 1990s, produced by Black music producers, and as well heavily influenced sonically by European dance pop and techno music of the 2000s. Number two, K-pop talent and musicians are heavily produced using a system of star making based off of the 1980s Japanese SAR system, which put young people through lots of like entertainment training, including singing, dancing, but also giving connection and curating a persona of like a public persona, giving connection to their viewers and their fans. That's why an idol isn't necessarily just a pop star. An idol isn't necessarily just, you know, like a Lady Gaga or like a Billie Eilish who is like a singer, songwriter, musician. They are, there's a heavy like performative aspect in the persona, the character, and in the way that these talents sustain their viewership through parasocial means. So there's that. And of course, like when you think about like contemporary K-pop, of course, like that is the reason why you have rabid fans on Twitter starting fan wars and stuff. That's why like their fandom communities are very, very organized at times. That's part of the big reason why. Of course, that is enhanced by the internet, but it's stemming partly from that system of star making. And of course, number three, the most important thing about K-pop is the use of Korean language and the talent being Korean. And of course, it being all of these things, the music, the talent production being localized for a Korean audience. I've been an idol fan for an embarrassingly long amount of time. I have seen the trends, I've seen the shifts. I am not a media professional. However, I have seen the shifts and the trends and all that. There are non-Korean people performing K-pop and they're considered K-pop idols. That's great, you know? We've got plenty of those people who make it really, really big. Like, a third of TWICE members are not Korean nationals. Actually, half of them are not Korean nationals. Yeah, there are 9 members in TWICE. There are 4 non-Koreans. Blackpink is also made up of half of non-Korean nationals, etc. I think moreover, at this point in time, we are also seeing in the K-pop entertainment industry, the K-pop industrial complex, I guess you could say, we are seeing people who are, we're seeing groups that are like entirely not made up of Korean nationals go to South Korea to train to become idols. They learn to speak Korean, they follow all of the trends of the K-pop industrial system, or the K-pop entertainment industry, if that's what you want to call it, and their goal kind of is to make it big in Korea for a whole host of audiences. Korea has become a pretty multinational place. And these groups are often made up of people who are like 0.0% Korean nationals. For example, XG, which is technically a Japanese girls idol group, but who sing in English, were trained in Korea for a number of years. Most of them are conversational in English and fluent in Korean. And they perform on Korean television. Japan is actually, if I understand correctly, is considered their second stop. Asia is what's most like becoming popular in the amorphous Asia is probably their biggest goal. But the question is, through what means, and how do they do that? Well, they started in Korea. Me-I is really, really, really similar, right? Because, as I said before, they are all Japanese, and all of them were produced on this Korean format reality television show. They're learning Korean, they're singing Korean, they're performing on Korean television. They have a large Korean fan base. One would, at least I, am starting to reconsider and kind of think, what is K-pop in the shifting trend of what the groups of make, what the makeup of groups are, what their target audience is, how they're being made. It's seemingly becoming a little bit more multinational on the surface, but it all boils down to the project of soft power, right? To invest a big chunk of your economy into the creation of cultural products in order to have some kind of political influence or cultural influence on the surface, but of course as well political influence in your exported products, such as music, such as movies, such as tourism. And again, I know I sound like a conspiracy theorist when I say this, but this is all just boiling down to my point. You can say that Mi-I is a Japanese idol girl group. If you want, you can say that they're J-pop, because of course they go through a star-making process in which they have to learn how to like curate their persona and curate like how they're going to interact with fans and stuff like that. But so much of what they're doing, all the trends that they're following sonically and in their star making system, how their work is kind of being distributed, is very influenced by the soft power of South Korea. Someone begins to think, right? Like, if that is the case, what does K-pop as a meta genre, not K-pop as in Korean pop music, as in the abbreviation for Korean pop music, but K-pop as in the meta genre, what is that looking like? And can we say that it's a meta genre? I'm putting that out there. Obviously, I have a lot of thoughts about this, but I've talked a lot. We're going to move into some more music. This is from the second part of season one of Delicious in Dungeon, which is an anime that I'm really enjoying. If you get a chance to watch it or read the manga, please do. It is a delight. This is by Regal Lily, and it is the ending theme of Delicious in Dungeon. Kira Kira no Hai.
Oh,
Wanna Be in Your Band by French noise band Johnny Carwash off of their latest album No Friends No Pain. Been kind of into their music lately. It's very fun. Hope you enjoyed that and hope you enjoyed the playlist. Thank you for tuning in to Typically Tuesdays today here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Keep up to date with literally what is happening in the world right now as we speak. Tune into Democracy Now! Every Monday to Friday from 10 to 11. I don't know. This should not be news to you, I guess, but it's important to keep up with the news because terrible things are happening all the time as a result of capitalism and imperialism, and everything is horrible, and we need to understand the context of why. And this is also your reminder to keep pushing for an immediate permanent ceasefire in Gaza and to keep calling for an arms embargo and sanctions on Israel in Canada. Just because the government says permanent ceasefire once does not mean that we let them off the hook. All right? We've got to do it for literally everyone on Earth because this is the relentless assaults on Gaza are setting some terrifying precedents in the realm of international geopolitical relations and war. We got to do it for Palestine. So keep doing that. Immediate permanent ceasefire, embargo of arms, sanctions. We will continue to demand for all those things until they actually happen. I'm going to bring it back really quickly now to the topic of the show. It might have seemed like a stray, but you know, if you've tuned into the program before, you know, like it's not. Final song of the day, because I've been talking so extensively about Mi'ai, I got to play their first song. And I have to be really honest as well. This is one of my favorite releases of 2024 so far, and I wasn't expecting it because it's, in my opinion, just like kind of like a generically okay sounding K-pop song or generically good sounding K-pop song. It's really generic, but it's also quite good in my opinion. It's really catchy. The music video is really cute as well if you ever get a chance to watch it. And it's got all the interesting and also horrible K-pop tropes. There's random rapping, it's delivered okay in my opinion, and there is also a dance break, and you'll hear it, you won't see it, such is the nature of a dance break. And also, again, they have a Korean version of this song, but I'm gonna play the original Japanese for you today. I hope you enjoy it. It's very fun. I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll catch you really soon. And this is Mi'ai with Click.
everyone, get in. It's right. Click, click.